You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep hope alive. There will be justice, and it's up to you as voters and as people with a voice in this country that still has a First Amendment, last I checked, anyways. It is up to you to make that justice happen. We're going to talk about keeping hope alive with two guests. They've been on my program before. They're both with Kids Forward. I love talking to these smart people about what is going on in Wisconsin. Kids Forward is a Wisconsin-based statewide organization that talks about how everybody, they work on the idea that everybody deserves to work hard and have success in their lives. That is what this is about. But it requires rich folks to pay their fair share, and it requires us to see beyond the divisions that are sown by, frankly, MAGA, so that we're fighting each other instead of looking at the folks that have their hands in our pockets. With that, I am so privileged to welcome back to the program Amanda Martinez. She's a senior policy analyst at Kids Forward, as well as William Park Sutherland, the government affairs director, also at Kids Forward. We're going to talk about food assistance, because if your belly's empty, it's pretty hard to study or learn at school. If your belly's empty, it's hard to be productive and successful at work. Thank you both for being here. It's quite an important moment.
Thank you so much, Maggie, and for the wonderful introduction. We're here today to talk more about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP or Food Share in Wisconsin. So a quick overview about the program: it provides low-income individuals and families food assistance so that they can buy groceries and put food on the table. So today we are here to talk about these deep federal cuts from this federal bill known as the H.R. 1 bill, often referred to as the Republican mega bill.
So for everybody that's listening, it's what I call, every time I talk about it, the big brutal bill. That's what Amanda's talking about. So please, and brutal because it's brutalizing to working poor folks and middle class folks, and basically was a billionaire subsidy, a billionaire welfare, mega corporation welfare bill. But sorry to interrupt with my colorful commentary, Amanda, but let's get back to SNAP and the cuts in the big brutal bill.
No worries. There are so many names out there, such as the Big Ugly Bill. But essentially, it slashes SNAP funding and expands strict work reporting requirements. So these new barriers are going to impact about 700,000 people who receive SNAP in Wisconsin. So I'm going to share a little bit more about the work reporting requirements, which essentially means that individuals will have to regularly prove that they're working, looking for work, or participate in a job training program just to be able to receive their food assistance. So to get a little bit more specific, anyone ages 18 to 64 who doesn't have a child under the age of 14 must prove that they're working to be eligible. And then this also includes parents of teenagers around the ages 14 to 17 who were previously exempt from this rule. And it creates barriers on top of barriers that already exist for people who are working, such as unpredictable work hours, transportation barriers, as well as limited access to childcare. And we also know that this has some administration costs to it, as it will be needed to implement the work reporting requirements, which I can pass it to William to share more about the funding implications.
If I can, just before we continue this discussion, one of the things that I think is really important for people to understand when we're talking about the big brutal bills cuts to SNAP is that there have generally been reporting and work requirements. Here, what they're doing is they're basically increasing the reporting amounts, levels, and kind of paperwork, which, folks, every single one of you listening has had some dispute with your insurance company, for example, right? Or you think you're entitled to some benefit. And to take time out to navigate those systems is itself sometimes a full-time job. And if folks are food insecure, they're likely also interacting with systems that for healthcare and or housing. How much time does a mother with kids or a couple have to devote to navigating systems? I have joked, what America needs is more paperwork. That's what this is, and it's going to cost the federal government more to administer because now we have to be checking all of these multitude and this increase in reporting. And the last thing I'll say before I turn it over to you, William, is you mentioned two essential things. I have never met anyone who does not want to have a job, work hard, and receive decent benefits, healthcare from that job, be able to afford to live just basic human dignity, right? But the things that are required to do that are affordable childcare in many instances and transportation. Yesterday, Congressman Brian Stile introduced freaking legislation to basically try to shut down the Milwaukee County transit system. We do not have anywhere near enough childcare, and the GOP here in the state of Wisconsin did not a damn thing about it in the last biennial budget. So if you want to require people to work, they got to be able to get to where the jobs are. So you need very affordable, highly accessible transportation, and you need affordable childcare. What are these folks supposed to do with their kids while they're out job searching and then spending hours online trying to fill up myriad paperwork? Sorry, my rant is over. Folks, let me just reset a little bit so you know who my great guests are. I've got Amanda Martinez. She is the Senior Policy Analyst for Kids Forward, and William Park Sutherland, the Government Affairs Director of Kids Forward. We're talking about the big, brutal bill's impact on supplemental nutritional assistance program, SNAP. William, you're going to tell us a little bit more. Again, I apologize for the rant, but it's so, so infuriating.
Totally fine. Your show. Thank you so much for having me as well. This bill is the deepest cut in history to people's food assistance and healthcare. You talked about red tape. This really weaponizes red tape in order to cut services for people, both in healthcare and in food. In Wisconsin, we call SNAP food share. It does that in two ways. One, it essentially penalizes states when they make mistakes in calculating people's benefits. That's called a payment error rate. And so it's going to make it so that when states either overpay or underpay, they're going to get in trouble for that. It also cut the amount of money that the state has received forever to administer the program, right? So we have county and state workers who need to enter the information, make sure things are accurate, work hard right now to keep our error rate low. And Wisconsin has one of the lowest error rates in the country. And also, importantly, has really good participation rates and also good program integrity rates. And so we do kind of everything quite well in Wisconsin. That costs money. And so the feds are weaponizing this payment error rate system, which is going to cost us money if we don't keep our error rate as low as it is, and is taking away our administrative support. So they're cutting in half the amount of money that the federal government usually chips in to help states administer the program. So we're basically being set up to fail, right? Yeah. Because we have to do more. We have to do more red tape, and we have to do it with less funding. And unlike some of the other provisions in the bill, most of these things went into effect immediately on July 4th with no guidance from the federal government yet. And so these things will have to be into a, be in effect in theory in November, and that's when the federal government can start kind of charging states for making these errors. And so really, both of these decisions taken together, it really sets up Wisconsin to fail. So we need more time to adjust to these seismic shifts in SNAP policy and financing. We need more time from Congress to delay these cuts. And if that doesn't happen, and we should need to proceed, and we need to proceed both ways, we need the state legislature to allocate funding so that we can continue to run SNAP efficiently and effectively. And that will require more money for employees and more money for more of these eligibility checks, more money to make sure our error rate is stays as low as it is.
I'm glad you kept going, William, because great minds think alike. I had literally written at the top of my notepad, setting up to fail. That is what the federal government is doing. That's what's happening in Medicare and Medicaid. It's what they're doing to the ACA exchanges. All of these things in the big brutal bill are not just draconian cuts. They are cuts and paperwork burdens that are designed to basically collapse the system. And I don't know about you, after listening to Donald Trump for weeks now say that he's targeting Democrats and Democrat programs, I do not trust anyone in the federal government to look fairly at payment error rate accountability and treat quote unquote blue states in a fair way as compared to red states. This is truly something that will impact people that you know. If you are listening right now, there is someone, I promise you, that you know that will not get the food assistance that they are entitled to under federal law because they forget to fill out yet another online form, or simply because we will not have the funding here in the state of Wisconsin, as my guests have pointed out, to help administer this explosion in paperwork burdens. It's incredibly ironic to me, William, that the Trump administration, who has claimed that we have too much regulation, right? We have too much paperwork. There's all of this inefficiency. What they've done for the systems that help people in greatest peril in this country, working poor, working families, is they have expanded the bureaucracy for those people. But when it comes to polluters or billionaires, well, that's where we're going to look at cutting regulations. In other words, again, putting their hands into the pockets of working families, taking food out of people's mouths, increasing regulatory burdens without a corresponding funding to help administer those burdens. It's a recipe for disaster, and we've got an immediate disaster on our hands. We're going to talk about the food emergency happening here in Wisconsin and across the country because Republicans will not negotiate with Democrats in good faith about restoring the ACA subsidies as the shutdown drags on. It is day, I think, 23-ish. I gotta get my counter out. Come right back. We're gonna talk about those immediate impacts here in the state of Wisconsin next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined by two friends of the program, now friends of yours, Amanda Martinez, the Senior Policy Analyst for Kids Forward, as well as William Park Sutherland, the Government Affairs Director for Kids Forward. We've been talking about the big, brutal bill's attack on the working poor and working families across the country, but especially here in Wisconsin, the 700,000 folks that rely on the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program to help keep food on the table. And before we start talking about this literally looming emergency days away, Amanda, I think it's important for listeners to understand who gets SNAP benefits? Because again, as I was pointing out, if you are hearing my voice, someone you know is getting a SNAP benefit. And it doesn't matter what area of the state, race, none of that matters. There are people that you know getting SNAP benefits. So help us understand that, the demography here a bit more.
Yeah, so I really want to emphasize that this really impacts all families across Wisconsin who receive food share. And in fact, 7 out of the 10 counties with the highest food share participation are actually rural counties. So we can see that this impacts both urban and rural counties across Wisconsin. And then I also want to emphasize that despite the stereotypes and narratives that exist out there, the majority of food share recipients are white in Wisconsin. So this is really about ensuring that all families, working families, children, parents, and seniors can really afford food during tough times. And you can go on our website, kids4.org, and you'll find their fact sheet where you can find some of these demographic data, as well as a map of the counties with the highest participation rates. But I really just wanted to name this and share more data about the demographic.
Yeah, I think that's
one other thing to add.
Go ahead, William.
About, you know, people who are not directly benefiting from SNAP, but might be benefiting indirectly. So we know that for every dollar of SNAP benefits received that working families get, that generates $1.50 into the state's economy. Because those people are shopping at local stores, they're shopping at large retailers, they're shopping at small businesses, they're shopping at farmers markets. And so, you know, this is a program that not only helps feed hungry families, but it also generates, stimulates the local economy and is an important segment of retailers and grocers' businesses as well.
Yeah, again, folks don't sit on those dollars. They don't even get dollars, right?
Right. So
you go and buy from your groceries, from your grocer, or the grocery, as Donald Trump likes to call it, because he's probably never shopped for a grocery, let alone the grocery, a day in his life. You know, deeply in touch with the American people. Speaking of which, come November 1st, there are reports that people's SNAP benefit, or here in Wisconsin, food share benefit cards will not get reloaded. People are going to go hungry. And what I find really interesting about the fact that, again, here in the state of Wisconsin, 7 of the top 10 recipient counties are rural. The majority of SNAP recipients are white. In other words, more likely than other demographic groups to have voted for Donald Trump. Despite that fact, Donald Trump's USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, is sitting on a huge pot of contingency money, and they're not using it to fund the SNAP benefits. Donald Trump would rather see many of his voters, his core base, go hungry than to release this contingency fund. William, what is going on here? This is insane.
So, you know, what we know, I can't tell you what's going on, Maggie. What we know is that the Trump administration has said that they will not be able to issue benefits for the month of November on time right now. And we heard already from Wisconsin Department of Health Services. And so anyone who is a food share recipient or is connected to the food share program, the best way to find out what's going on when anybody knows what's going on is to stay connected with them and make sure that your information is up to date in their systems. Make sure your mobile phone is in there so they can text updates to people. But what we've heard is that, you know, right now there's not going to be money that will be on time for SNAP for November. And there's about $5 to $6 billion in USDA emergency contingency money that could go to SNAP. There's additional money in the Food and Nutrition Service that could also be allocated to SNAP, potentially. You know, they've done things like that before. They reallocated money to pay military troops, which is also very important. So, you know, I think there are some options, and we are not there yet. And so we don't know what exactly will happen. You know, it's possible that the shutdown could get negotiated and end soon. It's possible that The USDA, you know, will change their mind. You know, I think that's what we at Kids Forward hope, is that the USDA changes its minds and decides to allocate emergency funds so that hungry families can put food on the table in November. We also know that cards are working right now, and all the benefits that people have access to right now, they can use throughout the month of October.
So use your benefits, folks. Get food in your pantries. Big, big thanks to Amanda Martinez, Senior Policy Analyst from Kids Forward, and William Park Sutherland, the Government Affairs Director with that fine organization. You can sign on to their letter. You can see what they're talking about these demographic breakdowns. Go to kidsforward.org. All of this is right there. We're going to put a link to their website, as well as the letter to demand action to restore these benefits and make sure that Wisconsinites do not go hungry. When we come back, I got a riddle for you. What do these things have in common? Lindsay Halligan, the IRS, $230 million, and an inspector general. We discuss next right here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. So I left you last segment with a little riddle. What do Lindsay Halligan, the IRS, $230 million, and an inspector general that just got fired have in common? I had already given you a program since 4 p.m. The $230 million is the dollar amount that Donald Trump is going to decide to pay himself for his bogus complaints about, again, investigations of his obvious and public crimes that he committed during his first administration. And that is an ethics no-no. It is self-dealing. It is a massive conflict of interest. It's just generically under the heading corruption with a capital C. And of course, the inspector general that he just fired, 15 plus years, very seasoned, well-respected, nonpartisan person, he's fired dozens of these, and he's doing it so that there's nobody there to report the corruption to. And what does that have in common with Lindsay Halligan and the IRS? For me, when I think about corruption, I think about individuals perverting and asserting control of government departments and government power to benefit themselves, right? Monetarily or on a partisan basis. Executive branch agencies are not supposed to be at their rank and file levels, and even mid-manager levels, and even up a level from that, partisan hackery to help enrich a president. That's not what's supposed to happen. It's not supposed to be at all those levels partisan hackery to engage in targeting of people that speak out against you. It is legitimately the definition of abuse of power and corruption. One of the most recent examples of that, of course, is Donald Trump's appointment of an insurance lawyer who has never prosecuted a criminal case in her entire life to be the top prosecutor in the Eastern District of Virginia. I went through yesterday the motion that Jim Comey filed to assert that she has pursued a vindictive prosecution orchestrated by the President of the United States that is solely intended not to actually deal with any crime, but to intimidate and punish former FBI Director Jim Comey because he spoke out against Donald Trump, of course, after he was FBI Director. Now, if you've been reading the news at all, what you know is that the Department of Defense, the FBI, and the DOJ literally lose their friggin' minds almost on the daily about the leakers. Oh my God, the leakers. Jim Comey is a huge leaker. That's what the Comey indictment is basically about, leaking stuff to the press. Okay? So big headline through line here is government corruption, the bastardization of government agencies to enrich a president, to enrich the shills and the sycophants, to, again, attack people who have criticized the president. That's the headline. But the sub-headline here, the through line, at least with Lindsey Halligan, is they complain about leakers and people without authorization talking to the press all of the time. Weekly, if not daily. We all saw the kerfuffle over Pete Hegseth basically issuing a DOD press policy that said, we get to approve what you write or you can go kick rocks. And the majority of the press corps went, that's fine, we won't keep our DOD credentials. Even Fox News said, that's ridiculous. So there was this very wonky thing that happened with Lindsey Halligan, I don't know, leaking or just being a complete moron in engaging with the press. You cannot make this stuff up. So there's this woman out there. She writes a website, is a primary author on a website called Lawfare. She's the senior editor there. Her name's Anna Bauer. And 11 days ago, on October 11th, she got a text message out of the blue from Lindsey Halligan, okay? And what happened after that was just insane. Lindsey Halligan engages in like an enormous text conversation with Anna Bauer. It went over the course of like a day and a half. Just back and forth text messages. You don't know what you're writing about. You've got your facts wrong. By the way, I've worked as a government lawyer for a long time. I've interacted with the press for a long time. I now arguably am a member of the press, though I am not a journalist. I do opinion work every day on the show. I never would put anything in writing to a journalist, to a reporter, to a member of the media or the press without clearly specifying, especially if I didn't want my conversation to be on the record, I would say, we are completely off the record. Let me tell you what I understand about something. I can then either go on background or we can go on the record if you need to quote me. If you want to quote me, I want to provide that quote to you in writing. I was very careful about this. Because I'm not an idiot, because I've worked in government for more than, I don't know, a nanosecond, Lindsey Halligan is a complete idiot. Because here's what. She engaged in this day and a half huge text exchange with the senior editor of a website, a publication called Lawfare, and never said anything about, I'm off the record. And here's the thing about talking to the press. You have to say that up front. If you don't say that up front, you are always on the record. There's no, like, gimme. Like, just kidding about that. I'm all that actually off the record. That's not how it works. Here's just a tiny little bit of this exchange because it's hilarious. This is the original message from Halligan to journalist Anna Bauer, the senior editor of a website and publication called Lawfare. Anna, Lindsey Halligan here. You are reporting things that are simply not true. Thought you should have a heads up. This in and of itself is stupid and weird. I have contacted reporters before when I have served in government to tell them that there's something wrong in their reporting. And I will text them and say, give me a call. We're off the record. I need to let you know what the facts actually are about this. I will detail them. I have texted people, quote, off the record and provided fact corrections and told them who they can confirm these things to. And by the way, as a lawyer for the government, I've never done those things with anything that was considered privileged or confidential. But she's just like, you're reporting things that simply are not true, such as? And the journalist Anna Bauer responds, awesome, thanks. Okay, I'm all ears. What am I getting wrong? Here's Halligan. You know this is garbage. Here's what she says. Honestly, so much, so much. I can't tell you everything, but your reporting in particular is way off. I just had to let you know. It's clear you don't have sources that are accurately telling you what you're writing. Seems clear to me that you just jump to your biased conclusions based off what you read instead of truly looking into the evidence. I'm doing it in Trump's voice because everyone that gets appointed by Donald Trump is effectively just his voice. There's no independent thinking going on. She doesn't ever get into specifics. A day and a half, nearly 36 hours of back and forth text messages, volumes of these, and never gets into specifics. This is insane. This is insane. This is what stupid people do who are grossly unqualified to be anywhere near the Department of Justice. By the way, Anna Bauer then had to reach out to the Justice Department to confirm that the text messages were in fact real. And the DOJ's spokesperson responded to the journalist Anna Bauer and said, you clearly didn't get the response you wanted, which was information handed over to you without having to dig into the facts of the case to craft a truthful story. When you contact a journalist to correct a story, the whole freaking purpose is you point them to direct evidence or sources that show them that they've gotten the story wrong. You don't just go, hey, you're wrong, you're biased. Blah. That's not how this works. And oh, the irony. Lindsay Halligan is the most scrutinized U.S. attorney in the nation right now. They harp on leaking and unauthorized communications to the press near daily. It's the actual origins of the point of the Comey indictment, which is, by the way, completely bogus. By the way, within days of this happening, Lindsay Halligan fired two very senior career prosecutors in her office who worked under Republicans and Democrats before this guy. For what? Leaking information and talking to the press without authorization. You can't even make this up. Put out a statement, the Eastern District of Virginia enforces a strict zero-tolerance policy of the unauthorized disclosure of information concerning ongoing investigations or cases, except if you're Lindsay Halligan and you're too stupid. There's so much wrong here. You are a hypocrite. You're a dummy. You didn't go off the record. You didn't actually counter any of the facts that a journalist Bauer reported. And she went back to the DOJ yet again and asked this, were these authorized communications? Is it consistent with DOJ policy or other applicable guidance for senior Justice Department officials to discuss ongoing prosecutors on a Signal text message? Does the department take the position that the contents of the messages are consistent with its legal obligations? Does Halligan, it goes on and on, of course. They don't respond to any of that, but Halligan texted me. By the way, everything I ever sent you is off the record. You're not even a journalist, so it's weird saying that, but I'm just letting you know. The journalist responded, I'm sorry, but that's not how this works. You don't get to go off the record in retrospect. Halligan, yes, I do. I just did it off the record. Confidence inspiring, isn't it? Stay tuned. I wrap up the day and give you a shutdown update. What's going on with that new congresswoman? That's all next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I wish it was Saturday night in the park. Would mean another week of this nonsense is over. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome if you're just joining me. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You know how those January 6th insurrectionists all got pardoned by Donald Trump within hours of his being sworn in? Well, one of them got arrested this past weekend for threatening to kill House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Of course, these are charges that have yet to be proven. He hasn't pled guilty, so this is all allegedly. Court documents obtained by CBS News said Christopher Moynihan was arrested this past Sunday after saying in text messages that he planned to eliminate Hakeem Jeffries when the top House Democrats spoke at an event in New York City on Monday. He was arraigned yesterday, pleaded not guilty. According to this same court filing, in the text message, Moynihan wrote, "Hakeem Jeffries makes a speech in a few days in New York City. I cannot allow this terrorist to live." I wonder where he got the idea from that Democrats might all be terrorists. Let's refresh our recollection, shall we?
The Democrat Party's main constituency are made up of Hamas terrorists, illegal aliens, and violent criminals. That is who the Democrat Party is catering to, not the Trump
administration. No, it's not, Caroline Leavitt. Again, we should just start dubbing over, using AI to generate like the Trump voice every time one of these sycophantic, knee-bending butt kissers starts talking. The Democrat Party is nothing but Hamas terrorists. I'm a Democrat. I'm not a Marxist or a socialist or a Hamas terrorist. I'm not an Antifa. Lovely. But of course, the outrage, I tell you, about what all of these Democrats say about Republicans. All right, now on to the shutdown update. Lest we forget, it is day 23 of the Trump shutdown, and let us never forget who is responsible for it.
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top, and the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is...
The interesting part there is you've got to get everybody in a room and lead. It sounds like he's talking about negotiating, doesn't it? Like, I'm the greatest negotiator that the world has ever seen. Then why is the Senate Majority Leader saying, we're not negotiating? Anybody? Anybody take a listen to John Thune, Senator Thune, saying, we're not going to negotiate?
Do you owe it to the American people to at least be negotiating?
Well, I think we are. We have negotiated.
No.
I don't know what there is to negotiate.
I don't know. An ACA subsidy restoration, you ninny? But we are. No, you're not. Is Trump in a room with you, John Thune, and Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem, and Mike Johnson, the adult version of the kid from A Christmas Story? You'll shoot your eye out every day. Mike Johnson shoots his eye out, I swear. They're not negotiating. The great negotiator, the world's greatest negotiator ever, isn't negotiating with Democrats over something that is going to overwhelmingly hurt more Trump voters than Democratic voters. And let me be very crystal clear here when I say this. I and everyone else that on the daily is talking about what is going on with ACA subsidies, that these need to be restored so that millions and millions of Americans can have one of the most essential components of basic human dignity, and that is healthcare. That it remains affordable, that we do not see millions going without health insurance. It's not perfect, it's not what it should be, but again, I have never heard a single Republican ever come up with another plan. I don't
complain about this. I don't say, yeah, this is a good place for Democrats to draw a line, since in days, people are going to be in extraordinary sticker shock. I don't do that as a Democrat, and I don't do it for Democrats. I do it as much for Republicans who are going to be just as hurt, if not more hurt, than Democrats will. ACA enrollment is 45% Republican, only 35% Democratic. So Democrats aren't just fighting for Democrats, unlike Donald Trump, unlike every single person in his administration who only think that they serve the people that voted for him. Democrats are going to the mat not just for healthcare for Democrats. They're going to the mat. They have drawn this line in the sand for all Americans, regardless of who they happened to vote for. And by the way, I thought that's what we actually wanted in elected leadership. So unless and until I hear an actual plan from someone in the MAGA party about what they're going to do about the 10-15+ million Americans who are going to be priced out of health insurance, we're not actually having any real negotiation, real good faith discussion at all. We just have a bunch of MAGAs screwing the middle class so that they can give welfare to mega corporations and billionaires. And I say, no more. Folks, you got Pete Schwab coming up with Nightlight if you want to ease into your hump day afternoon. I'll be back tomorrow, of course. We got great guests, including an expert on civil-military relations. You're not going to want to miss that. But this does it for me. Remember, I will stand up for you, regardless of your party. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.